Okay, I would like to introduce tonight's speaker, Michelle, from San Diego.
Thank you, Rick. Hi. Hi, I'm Michelle, alcoholic.
Hi, Michelle.
Anyway, I just think it's pretty interesting that I was standing here in 1989 with 90 days, and I just moved from L.A., and I came back to San Diego to be with my grandmother, and here I am. What? You know, you almost have to say, what? So, anyway, thank you so much, and thanks, everybody, for coming over. So here we go. So I'm the youngest girl of four, and I had the kind of mother that always did everything with you. I was a big track star in high school, and but I started like racing at 11 in good old Chula Vista, where I grew up, which is where I do live now on Moss. Mm-hmm. And anyway, it's kind of a weird, trippy feeling because it's like, oh, the whole thing has turned into a 360. And anyway, you know, I had just, to me, it was the best mom. And unfortunately, at 16, she passed. I was 16, and she was everything to me. My best friend, my confidant, my partner in sports, my best friend. I mean, I just thought personally that my life basically was just ended personally. I know that people could probably die from that kind of pain, but anyway, she was always there, and I was already running in some track meets. And anyway, this is when I was just 12 and 13. And so here we are in high school, and I love to run. I like to sprint. And I would race, and I broke some records. And I would love to run. It was my first love. Before I loved anything besides my mom and dad. But that's what happened. So I broke a few records. And I mean, when you're going into 11th grade and your mom passes, it's like, why run? That's what I was thinking. Why even run? Because when someone means that much to you and they're not there, that's kind of, it just puts a wet blanket on everything. But I still ran. I still broke a couple more records. And anyway, right after high school, I just remember saying, let's just fly with the wind. And I started to smoke the green herb. And I'm just going to try to get through that part. But I do have a lot of outside issues, way outside. And so I started to do that, and then just, you know, like a true alcoholic, just progresses into bigger things. And I worked at Price Club. That's what it was in the 80s. Uh-huh. And I was, I think, 21 or something. And they said, well, I didn't really think I had a drinking problem then, but I didn't for just a few months, but a few years. And so they had some parties, and of course, everybody's drinking, and that means it's going to be fun. So I ended up making headlines, doing things that we've all done that are embarrassing. And, you know, it's funny at first, and then if just not after that, it's like, oh, God. And thank God I don't have to do that. But anyway, what happened is I moved up to L.A. in Signal Hill. Don't move there, by any, just letting you know, unless you just like oil wells. And that's all you want to see. But anyway, I was doing pretty good in Chula Vista, and they said, if you want to be promoted, move to another store. So I did, and, I ended up moving into a nice little apartment in Lakewood, which is really close to McDonnell Douglas, if anybody knows, right up the street. It was a cute little cottage. And I ended up moving right next door to a crack user. Oh, so anyway, what are the chances? But I was already using the white powder a lot, and then when I moved to LA, it was just like everything grew. The whole using, the drinking just expanded like the city. And he said, "Do you want some?" And I just remember saying, and anyway, so that was the start of the, the vicious tornado that I started to turn into. And I lost that job at Price Club due to drinking and using. And then I had to get two other jobs that were just like Price Club, but they were like ones in Downey, and my brain's burnt. I can't remember where they even were. That's why we get a lot of brain cells. And thank God. So I just ended up not having any job, and the boyfriend that I moved in with was out, and that summer was just like a cyclone of using guys. And don't act like you guys are saints in here, because it's not going to work. So anyway, that was the summer of that, and the boyfriend was out. Some other guy was back in that was way worse, and you try to ask him to go home. He's like, no. And he wasn't pleasant sometimes. So it was just bad to worse. And this boyfriend that came back said, "You're going to go down to this bar and you're going to get a job." And I was like, well, what choice did I have? I really didn't have any offers coming my way. So I went down there and started to check out these girls. It was a bar. A topless bar. Yay, everybody get excited. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. This was in Downey. If you guys, a little tiny, probably a little hole in the wall, but I was so small and scared. I looked at it, it looked big to me. I think when we're scared, things look bigger than they are. So I was drinking two pitchers just to have the nerve to ask for a job. And finally, I just could barely say hi to the manager. And anyway, he said, "Okay, I know. You should show up on Monday with tennis shoes, shorts, and like a jersey for football." And I was like, oh, good, sports. I love sports. Because that's the only thing I could relate to. That's all I did when I grew up. So it sounded good. And anyway, I did, and I just remember that night all the girls who were going to be working were standing in line ready to get a drink because they knew what we were going to do. And I had to stand in that line probably twice as much as they did. But I didn't know at the time that I was a budding alcoholic at 24. You know, it just doesn't take time for this disease. And anyway, I started working, and through that time, I got sent home like four times drunk, and the bosses were starting to look at me, and then, "We don't want to see you drinking tonight, Michelle." And I was like, okay, just for that one night. Once they were off, the heat was off, it was on, and this wasn't any sippy, "Oh, let me get another one later." No, it was a demand. It was on demand. And if the guys were too slow buying me one, they were, then I have to buy my own. I was like, psh. And those days, you guys, no offense, guys, but they were really easy. And you could do anything. Walk off with their pitcher. You know, they'd throw money at you. It was like the land of who cares. And this was really true. And I was glad because I wanted to be in that world after everything I had been through. I was like, right on. This is a place that they said I can work and drink. I thought I was Bill. I just arrived. I felt like I just arrived. And I was just like, everybody, the world is fine. And so getting drunk, you know, getting sent home, and I probably would have lost that job too. But what happens is there's a higher power always working, and we have no idea that he's even around or anybody's helping us. We have no idea. And I knew that I was really getting to the point where I'd already lost control, but I knew deep down I was in trouble. And there was this gal, and she was really pretty with long blonde hair, really pretty, and I overheard her talking at the bar. And she goes, I have 30 days of sobriety. And I was thinking, that's impossible. You can't do that. There's no way you can go 30 whole days. Because at that time, I was just a suction cup for alcohol. Oh, yeah, I was a human suction cup. And I was only 97 pounds. But it doesn't matter. You could just want to drink as much as the ship and weigh 97. Because it's the inside. My alcoholism, my disease had progressed quickly. And anyway, so I heard her and I went, oh my God, how is that possible? So I just wanted to tell you though, if you think that no one sees you and no one knows you're sober, that's not true. There's a lot of walking big books around here that are just being of service. They're just sober. They're not trying to do anything. And she was my walking big book. So I was just staring at her. She had no idea. And I came up to her a little later. And I said, so Blondie, how do you feel? And I was hoping to hear, oh, I don't feel good, it sucks. I was hoping, but she goes, oh, I feel really, really, really good. And I was like, oh, I do not want to hear that. I was, you know, because I was ready to just drink into oblivion. And but seeing her like that at 30 days, all happy, not a means, because I'd already seen mean and ugly drunks. I was only interested in a happy person. And she was happy. She was happy, joyous, and free with 30 days, which to me seemed like way too long. So I could only go 4 days on my will. That's it. 4 days. And I would move a bus if you didn't get out of my way. So it just shows you that the power of the demand of this disease. And so anyway, I just started to watch her drinking my Corona by the wall. And she's just working and not puking in the bathroom, not losing her money, not dropping her money, not walking on someone's chair and almost falling off the chair. I almost fell off. I could have hit myself on the table. I mean, blacking out, not blacking out. Oh, yeah, let's go this way. I made out with people I didn't know in the bar. Okay, that's a little bit, there's a little problem. That's not how social people drink. So, I mean, it's just, you know, I mean, you see things and you don't have any inhibitions. You just go. And those were kind of scary times. I mean, who knows? I'm sure people are still doing it, but I don't think it flies the same way. And anyway, I could have lost that job. But anyway, I just went up to her one day after the chapter 3 where it says getting worse, never better. That was me. And so I walked up to her at the bar and I said, I guess I'll just go to a meeting with you. And she goes, okay. I guess I didn't know I was going to get emotional, but I just think about those times. I mean, that was a long time ago. And anyway, She just turned 36 years in Hawaii. So, you know, two girls in a topless bar getting sober is a pretty damn strong God. It's a pretty damn strong God. If that can do it, and I think anybody can get sober. So, but she goes, okay. She never said one time, yeah, you really need it. Because I swear to God, if anybody would have said that, I'd have been gone. That's why we're so loving and kind and patient with each other, because we are so sensitive. And one little word, that's why we're so kind, and it's so important to be that way. So anyway, I started to go to AA meetings where it says, it was a bar, it was in Seal Beach, and it says, Thursdays, where happy hour never ends. Well, they had all kinds of awesome big book meetings, step studies, women's meetings. It was a really big outfit. And I just looked at those people, and they were like laughing. And my, you know, I'm just like this strangled, stressed, looking skanky. That's an 80s word, by the way, that will never go out. I was a skank. And 97 pounds, that's really not, it's called gaunt, not thin. There's a difference. And I just used to remember I had to wear long sleeves to cover my wrist bones because I was so thin, you know. So, but anyway, I started to go there with her, and I just looked at these people, and I thought, how could they possibly be so calm? They sit still, and they are actually laughing like they have a brain that works. And because I was such a spaz, I was not sitting still when I was at the end of my drinking. I was actually violent. And I just looked at these people like, wow, that's interesting. But I just kept coming, and I fell in love with the Alcoholics Anonymous. And my grandmother, which is my mom's mom, was alive, living here in Chula Vista, right on 3rd Avenue. She said, come home, honey. Come be with your granny. So I did, because that's my mother's mother, and I wanted to have something to be with my mom. And I did, and she was really happy about my sobriety, and she passed, you know, a year after I got sober, but I got to be there for her. And now my father comes in the picture, and he was drinking, you know, because he was in such pain. He just went right for the bottle after my mom died. And I mean, that's what a lot of men do. And I'm not angry. I was at one time, but I can see his pain, why he would do that. And she curbed his drinking when she was alive. So he didn't have to work. He retired from the Navy at 42. So, you know, he had nothing to do. And anyway, it was kind of hard because I think, you know, after getting sober, being with my family, but I felt like they were strangers because I was living in L.A. for 3 years and I never saw them. I couldn't really talk to them because I never really wanted to talk to anybody. You can't talk when you're drunk all the time. And but little by little, I just suited up and showed up at our brunches like we do. And it just took a little time for my dad and I to get to know each other better. And it took quite a while. And we weren't very close for the longest time. I just kept working the steps. And my sponsor, Althea, she said, why don't you ask your dad to come and see you get a cake? And I was already 9 years sober. And I said, okay. So I asked him, and he goes, no. And you could just see his eyes go back and forth because he was just scared. You know, he goes, I'm telling you, he's scared of the things. Just keep asking. I said, okay. So I did. I asked at 10, no, 11, no, 12, no, 13, no, 14. He just said yes. And he was sitting right over there. So it was pretty fun seeing my dad watch me get a cake. And that's another big circle. So that was a big thing. And, you know, I've had the blessing of getting into service right away. And when I was in L.A., before I moved, this lady goes, whatever you do, get into service. And I remember her name's Nancy, and she moved to San Luis Obispo, and I said, I will. And I went to that Monday night on good old East Naples, and I had 5 months of sobriety, and they said, we need a coffee maker. And I'm all like, and they're like, we've never seen her before. We don't know her. And they gave me a shot. So I got to make coffee for a year and 4 months. And then from there on, I just got to have a lot of fun and service with being the secretary of a meeting. And then my sponsor, Althea, was in service. And she was the treasurer for District 8, which is a two-year commitment. And so she kind of gave me the example of being in service on the general service level. And that's when I became a GSR for the Monday night. And it became a very big meeting. And, you know, I was obsessed. Oh, here's another fun part. I was only obsessed with one of the biggest losers you could ever see. And they're all, Michelle, the guy's fat, he's got pimples, and he doesn't make any money. What is it that you see in him? And, you know, I was just like, I didn't want to tell him. You know, I just was like, you know, low self-esteem and things like that, not knowing how to leave a bad relationship, and that's how that happened. And being obsessed after you break it off, finally, I had to. And but then being so obsessed after, I became a GSR, and I think it's because I dove into that the way I did with both feet, that God relieved that obsession from being a GSR. I was like, God, is there any bigger diving I could just do so I could get out of this? But he took it away. It's just amazing what he can do when we just are willing to do something that's going to be helping ourselves or helping others in any way in this program. So that's what I did for 2 years, and I have to admit that commitment went fast. That 2 years was gone. And then I got to go to all these fun processes, the Pacific Region AA Service Assembly. It was really fun. I got to go to 3 of those and just watch people in AA be of service at the district committee member, which is it's really nice to be able to learn how AA works. And I'm going to be a GSR again for another group in Mission Hills, which is a 9 o'clock Zoom meeting if anybody wants to go. But anyway, I had just, you get to grow up in this program. With all the service and talking with the group and telling them, being the voice of what's going on and letting people know what's going on in AA and having them vote, it really helped me grow up. And so just these service commitments and having a good sponsor and, you know, actually straightening up because I was so high strung and just, you know, I was a wreck pretty much, but I got better from all the women. I had to go to several meetings, several, all just remember serendipity on Thursday afternoon at 12:30 and Monday night. And now I go to Wednesday night, which is this awesome group of women. A bunch of them are here. Yeah, Miss Kim is the PR, public relations. She'll let you know who's speaking. But anyway, it's just I had to go to a lot of women's meetings, and I was to be of service to 4 years in the general service, and then it just kept going. And so I just, I guess I'll just cruise over to this way. I did finally... I went to City College, and I got a little degree And my sponsor goes, just do reading, writing, and arithmetic. That sounded fine. I just did what she said. And so I got my AA degree in liberal arts. Hey, and it took me 5 years to get a 2-year degree, but so what? The fact is, I did it. Right? Oh, I mean, all those old ideas of Michelle's not smart, really? Well, that's not what my history teacher said. So I just, you know, those old ideas are just what they are. They're fake, they're old, and they are a lie. So we get to see these things as we take action in these new adventures. And I was really proud, and I went to my sponsor's house at the time right after, and that was Corinne. And Corinne had almost 50 years of sobriety. She got sober in 1950 and knew Bill W. because he was 15 years sober when she came in. And we just have these legacies that we have here. And she said that she wouldn't sponsor me until I had 10 years of sobriety. I'm all, what was I like before? I mean, God, it sounds funny, but I was like, what was I like before if you couldn't sponsor me? But anyway, I guess we won't go into it. But anyway, I went over there, and she always called me Snickle Fritz, and Bill, her husband, you know, he had like 32 years, and she had almost 50, and it was just like going to this house where nothing but love. There's just nothing but love. And they were all excited, congratulating me, and I just had a really good time, and gave me a lot of confidence in myself. And just moving forward now, I got into selling cars, and I ended up selling 206 cars in 2006. And yeah, my dad was like, oh, hi, money bags. And I think he was proud, really, he was. And my sister Christine, who's a little older than me, she was really smart, and she was making a lot of money. And anyway, he was proud. And so what happened is I got my, you know, real estate license after that. And then I was selling some homes. I wasn't doing that great. I had a really bad, terrible Red Bull problem. I mean, I know it sounds funny, but if you could just see how evil that drink is. And of course you can't, but I had some serious addiction to it. And then I, after drinking it for a couple years, stopping, I was like, well, it must not be that bad if I can get 90 days without a Red Bull. But you know, it didn't really help me sell cars, because when I would come down, I was like, I wanted to be a bitch, but you can't do that selling cars. So I wasn't able to be my puffy, bubbly self. And I still sold, but it wasn't fun. So anyway, I finally, at 23 years of sobriety, I had to surrender it. And my God, was that painful. I had not ever had that much pain in a surrender. And I've had 4 different other obsessions. So that just shows you. And my nervous system was pretty mangled. It took me some time, you know, I'm not kidding. So it took me a couple years for my brain to really get back, because I could feel it. So anyway, nobody could tell, but I could. And thank God, I just kept asking God to relieve that and help me really a lot. I still ask him. Because you don't know what's in this world that will try to, this disease should not be underestimated by any chance, it'll do anything. And it cannot be trusted ever. And anyway, when Corinne passed away and then Althea passed away in 1999, and then Tony left, who was actually a blessing, but at the time I thought it was horrible. And then my sponsor's like, you've been saved. And I was like, oh, really? But I was really mad at God, because my sponsors had died, my mother died, if there anybody else, I was so mad. She goes, Michelle, you're going to have to start trusting God when you don't like what's going on. And I was 13 years sober, and I was working for Mitsubishi with a stupid mechanic outfit on, selling Mitsubishis. I'm like, gee, this is really quite the show here. You can't make this up. And I just remember I was like in a really ugly bathroom at the Mitsubishi dealership in this outfit, like looked like a mechanic. Because by the way, when I sold Toyotas, my used car manager said, oh, Michelle, selling cars is a man's job. Oh, really? Is that what I did for 7 years? A man's job? Thank you. I mean, why would you say that? So anyway, I just I got through selling cars with Toyota and Honda, and I started to sell. I got good at it because my mother, she was so good at talking to people when she taught swimming in the backyard. And anyway, God, I hope I don't lose my train. So anyway, about 2014. Is when my sister Christine was getting ill, and she had to lose her job of like a systems analyst. And what happened is her husband cheated, and she just didn't know how to handle it. I mean, we have tools. We can be mad, but we have some tools here that could help us not go crazy. And she didn't have those. So my sister Kim said, why don't you go up, rent your condo out, and go live with Christine. And I did. So she had this wonderful house in Carlsbad. She had made all that money, $140,000 for 20 years. And she couldn't work anymore because the frontal temporal lobe, it's where you make all your executive decisions. It started to deteriorate from being burnt out and just bitter and hurt. People take things differently. So I went up and I started living with her, and she was bitter. And the reason is because she was so mad that her husband left. And I said, I know, Christine, it's not funny, it's hard. But she kept like being rude to me, and I said, but I'm not going to take your abuse. I'm not going to help you if you're going to just sit there and be abusive. So anyway, I did leave, and I left for 30 days, and I came back, and she was treating me with respect. That's all I wanted. So I started to be able to help her like we help each other in AA and just be that loving person. And in 2 years, I took care of her for 2 years and 5 months. And we were the best of friends. And I would be like, you could have never told me that. Because we were always at each other's throats growing up. My grandmother's like, sibling rivalry. And I didn't know those words, but grandmothers do. And anyway, my family really stepped up to help my sister. And we just did anything. And I just remember just doing anything and just serving and serving. Before I knew it, my heart was changed. Because that's what happens. Our heart changes. And we started to become the best friends. And it's like God took all that hate off my sister's heart. She became the sweet person that we knew when we were growing up. It was awesome. It was something you just wouldn't. It's almost like some movie. And anyway, it was the truth, and she passed away, and I got to be there for her, and it really has changed my life. And just to go on about the spiritual, it was about right there where our Scottish girl is sitting in the brunette next to her. Sorry, excuse me. Oh, Michelle? Oh, that's good. Michelle, I was sitting right there when I was turning 29 years. And you remember Nicole. Everybody knows Nicole. She was giving me my cake. And Liz was there, and Larice was there. And I was just sitting there listening to how it works, and, you know, just listening. And then all of a sudden I felt like I could, like I sensed some bubbles, and then those went away, and I just went, And then this warmth started to come into my chest, and I'm like, what is this? It was my sister, Christine, visiting me and congratulating me for my 29-year cake, because we had just separated not very long before. And to know that my sister was so proud, she came. I had no idea she was going to do that, but I knew it was her because I was like, oh, my God, I felt so much peace. Huge. She gave me a glimpse of where she lives. That's a nice place. I could have seen a fire and would have just sat there because it was so peaceful and so loving. That's where she is. And I'm glad for her. I'm happy that she's there because we only want the absolute best for my sister. So anyway, then that was 2017, and I'm just going to speed up. Good, it's almost time to end. This part's going to get interesting. I have another older sister named Kim, and she decided, my dad was getting older, and he asked Kim to move in, and he actually let me move in too, and I got a really good caregiving job at the time, and I was gone 4 days a week. And anyway, Kim started to want to take my dad's money, and she had to push me out of the house, so it took her like a year, and she literally pushed me. I don't even want to go into all the things. There's so many things that at the end, she goes, Michelle, why don't you let us know when you're coming over? Oh, by the way, there's Christy. My neighbor that I asked to please rent a room because I needed somewhere to rent to be close to my father. And Christy was right next door. So I got a chance to rent a room and go see my dad. And then Kimberly just got, you know, more controlling. And boy, we didn't realize that she had in 90 days already had my dad, who was on dementia medication, write a letter saying, you know, give everything to my daughter, Kimberly Murphy, and there's three of us left. So at the very end of her taking care of my father, I brought over some bologna because he loves that. And she goes, you need to make an appointment the next time you come over. And I really thought we were talking some kind of foreign language. I just did not ever know what the hell she could come up with those words. This is my father. And anyway, so what had ended up happening is she got tired, I think, of taking care of him because she left to a high school reunion, and she stayed there for hours, and my dad fell, and he was there on the floor for some hours, and then he had to go to the hospital. And 27 days later, he had passed, because once a person falls, it's not easy. And anyway, I still got to be there for my dad and cook for him and clean for him for 2 years and be in that house. And anyway, what ended up happening is my sister would not show us the will, and we ended up having to go to probate for 11 months. That's really painful. I pray that never happens to anybody, but I heard these horror stories about brothers and sisters taking the money and running, and I just thought, wow. And it happened to me and my oldest sister. So we had to go after her, and the program teaches us to take action. And we did. And we had to go through 11 months of financial pain, anguish. We said she should die, and we meant it. And it might sound funny, but we were. So it was not fun. So anyway, I had to, like, you have to press into your higher power when these things are on. And it's not fun. It's hard. And so I'm like, she has to start this whole thing. And I wouldn't even have to go through this or work at this if she hadn't been so damn greedy. And at the end there, Christy calls me and she goes, hey, there's some people going in your house. And I'm all, oh my God, she's trying to sell the house. She was. If I wasn't a realtor, I looked up and there's my house on sale. I'm like, oh my God. I said, Kim, what are you doing? She goes, oh, I'm just following the trust. I said, bullshit. I said, you are not following the trust. You're trying to hide and sneak and sell the house without me and Deanne. I said, you are effing crazy. And that's when I started to really show some heat, because I wasn't before. And that's when I started to show up and say, this is no good. And she goes, okay, I'll take it off the market and I'll call Mark. Yeah, right. And so I just, anyway, if it wasn't for Christy to help me move, and some people just are angels and they have invisible wings. And that's just a lot of us that are trying to help each other, save each other from all kinds, not just, of course, we need to help each other not drink, but there's a lot of other dire situations too. And anyway, so we ended up getting the money we deserved. And when we had to go to mediation, Kimberly let me buy the house. So I just bought my other sister out. And anyway, I just sold my condo. It was necessary. And I had it for 18 years, a day at a time, working hard. Way back when the market was the worst, this is when I bought, which is the worst time to buy. But because I kept it and it went down and then it goes back up, good old San Diego, I ended up doing fine. And I'm thankful for all the hard work. It's because of you guys. And Bill, I love his principle, the stick-to-itiveness. That's my favorite principle. And anyway, I got to love my dad, and I know he's so proud. Now I'm living at the house where I grew up in with all those cool childhood memories. And Christy's my neighbor, which you can't get a better neighbor. And then Miss Georgine is my roommate. So we're AA sisters. And it's just better than I thought. So I'm really happy that it turned out. And I'm just going to probably see about moving into some residential and commercial real estate, because I have some people I want to work with and I want to run for city council. I know everybody's excited. But I do. I like politics. What?
Pitch?
Vote for me, yes. I at least I know I have people in AA will vote for me. We have a big group. So anyway, but yeah, I have these things have been on my heart for like 4 or 5 years and they've grown. And so that tells me that it's a calling. And I really am having a good time. I'm really grateful that I'm over all this and everybody's okay. And I have a beautiful cat named Moonlight, who's all black with gorgeous green eyes. And he was a stray that I met right in front of Christy's house when I was renting. And boy, you know, these animals choose you. You don't choose them. I'm just telling you, I think they're here for us. These animals can love the greatest capacity. And the only thing I have really close to St. Francis of Assisi is that I love animals like he did to that depth. Other than that, forget the saint. But anyway, I just love everybody, and you guys are the best. You're the one that makes me grow, and it's because of you that I'm really here. So I'm going to stop there and say thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Michelle. Mm-hmm. Vote for Michelle. Let's see. I would like to thank Michelle again for speaking. Hope you come back and visit soon. Okay. I would also like to thank the residents of the house and the Women's Auxiliary for a fantastic dinner. And we will now close in the usual manner with a prayer of the speaker's choice. Okay.